It's good to see everybody. Glad we have an opportunity to be together. I wanted to begin by telling you a story about a man named Alexander Sanders. He is a former judge for the South Carolina Court of Appeals, and he tells the story about one day coming home from work to find his three-year-old daughter Zoe just sobbing uncontrollably. Unfortunately, her pet turtle had apparently died earlier that day. And his wife, of course, was kind of glad to hand this situation off to him. And he thought, well, I'll just sit down and begin to explain to her the mysteries of life and, you know, death. Well, that didn't really go over too well with a three-year-old. She couldn't comprehend that all that much. So then he made what I think is a pretty simple suggestion. Let's just go to the pet store and let's buy another turtle. Well, Zoe was, although three, she was a little bit too smart for that and knew that there was something different about a turtle. You can't just replace a turtle. So then he decided, well, how about this, Zoe? Let's have a funeral. And she, of course, 3 years old, didn't know what a funeral was. And so she asked what that was, and he said, well, it's kind of really just a way to honor. It's a festival, if you will, to honor your turtle. It's kind of like a birthday party. We'll have cake and ice cream and lemonade, and we'll have balloons, and we'll invite all your friends over, and you can play, and we'll celebrate your pet turtle. And about that time, they look down. The turtle is moving. And so little Zoe's dad, Alexander, he looks at her. He's just so excited. Look, the turtle's not dead. Just as innocent as she could be, she looked up at her dad and said, Daddy, let's kill it. We chuckle at that. That's funny. But on a serious note, I tell you that story because I think our society has come to really the same idea that little Zoe did that day. That whenever a life interferes with our plans or our wants or our pleasures, in our world, one of the solutions is to simply end that life. Wouldn't you agree we live in a day and time where there is very little respect for human life? Of course, I think the first example that we could think of tonight is if a woman is pregnant and it's not convenient for her to give birth to that child, a woman in our society says that she can deal with that problem by killing, by murdering that unborn child. In the 49 years since Roe versus Wade legalized abortion in our country, it's estimated that over 62 million babies have lost their lives in abortion in that manner. Babies' lives simply ended because they were unwanted and considered an inconvenience to parents. Decided to end their life just simply because it interfered with their plans. You know, there's some people who take it even a step further. There's a man by the name of Peter Singer. He's a professor of philosophy at Princeton University. And he is quoted, and I actually looked this up this week, and I wanted to see if there was anything else that I could find. Let me read you this quote first of all. He says this, killing a defective infant is not morally equivalent to killing a person. Very often, it is not wrong at all. And on Peter Singer's website this week, I got on there to look, see some of the other things that he said. And he has a frequently asked question page. And this is something that is on that fact page that says, did you really say that? And he says, yes, I did in fact say that back in 1979. And he goes on to say that I've changed my wording a little bit because this defective infant description, well, it isn't really accepted today. And so he goes on to explain, here's a better way of saying that. But he doesn't deny the fact that he says killing a defective infant is not morally equivalent to killing a person. It is not wrong at all. I mean, he further believes really that that baby is not a human being until about a month or so after it is born. And then he would say, even if that baby is born, well, it doesn't have any desire to continue living. And so it's okay to end that baby's life. Now think about this is not just some crazed person on the streets. This is a professor of philosophy in an education institution, a respected Education Institute. And perhaps maybe the most frightening thing is how ending human life has just become entertainment in our culture. You think about that. We all see this. We all see this on our TV screens, on our computer screens. It's all over video games. It was on video games when I was a kid. Just all of the violence that we see on our screens every day. And really, when it comes to violence and killing, our society just kind of seems to shrug its shoulders and say, well, that's just the way that it is. It's the times that we live in. And maybe that is indeed the case. I mean, you can't seem to turn on your favorite news channel and even just hear in our local news and hear about young children being shot in this city. Or you hear about terrible, terrible crimes that even parents commit against their children. It just breaks our hearts to hear those things. And you think about the fact that it breaks our Heavenly Father's heart as well. We live in a time where there is very little to no respect for human life. But it's not a modern problem. This isn't something that is new. I mean, you think about the fact that in Exodus chapter 20, the sixth of the Ten Commandments says this: you shall not murder. You shall not murder. And we have been reading just this past week and in the week before, you'll maybe remember some of the commandments and some of the law regarding murder and how that was handled under the law of Moses. And before we kind of talk about the implications of this commandment and what the Old Testament has to say about it, there's a few things that I want to mention. The old King James Version just simply says, thou shalt not kill. And so then you might take that and say, well, then all killing is wrong. Well, it should be obvious, I think, that God didn't intend to prohibit all killing. And I say that because the penalty for breaking this commandment under the law was what? It was death. So if this commandment meant that you can never take a person's life, then no one would ever be punished for breaking this commandment. So I think there's a definite distinction made in the Bible between killing, which was lawful, and killing, which was unlawful. And so that's why, like, the English Standard Version says here, you shall not murder. And the law of Moses even said that there are times when you are justified, when there is no guilt in killing another person. I mean, suppose, for example, someone breaks into your house in the middle of the night, you wake up, you discover that person, there is a struggle, and that thief is killed. Well, according to the law of Moses, killing a person in that way didn't break this commandment. Exodus 22, verse 2, if a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. And you think about if I had time, we could go to Romans chapter 13 and talk about how God instituted the government. The government doesn't bear the sword in vain. And so we understand the Bible is clear that as long as the children of Israel behaved properly under the law, they would be considered by God justifiable for that strike and that individual dying. The Bible is also clear that the same God who told the Hebrews not to kill, well, he often sent them into war as well. So, when you think about the law of Moses, and the law of Moses also said that accidental killing was not punishable. In fact, boy, there's a great lesson in here. Maybe we'll have some time to talk about the cities of refuge. There's so much in that. Remember, we talk about seeing Christ on every page. That's another lesson for another time. But in Deuteronomy chapter 4, the law of Moses had these six cities of refuge that were set up for a person where they could go and they could be protected if they accidentally killed someone. Verse 41 of Deuteronomy chapter 4, then Moses set apart three cities in the east beyond the Jordan that the manslayer might flee there. Anyone who kills his neighbor unintentionally without being at enmity with him in time past, he may flee to one of these cities and save his life. And remember, the law of Moses also said that capital punishment was permitted. In fact, the Old Testament not only permitted it, but required the death penalty for certain crimes. Exodus 21 and verse 12, whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. And so you remember that God commanded the death penalty for murder, for several other crimes as well. But that's what the commandment maybe doesn't say. What I really want to talk about is what's the principle behind this? What does it say? And why does it say it? Why do we read these scriptures all throughout the law of Moses and, of course, even into the new covenant today? What is the purpose? What is God trying to get across when he gives this command, you shall not murder? Well, I think what God is saying here is that all of human life is precious. It is sacred. And we should have the utmost respect for human life. Why is human life so valuable? Let me give you a couple of reasons why. First of all, is this: human life is valuable because we are made in the image of God. You go back to creation. Go back to that account in Genesis, if you will, and all of life, including plants and animals, of course, all of that is created by God. But if you look in Genesis chapter 1, you'll notice that humans are created really in a different way than all the other things that were created. In the acts of creation, remember, God would say, let there be, and it was so. Let there be light. Let there be plants. Let there be birds and fish. And it was so. But in Genesis chapter 1, we see how God spoke and creation occurred, but the creation of human life is different. In Genesis chapter 1 at verse 26, sorry, my screen's not on and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm having a hard time seeing that. Genesis 1 at verse 26, God said, let us make man in our image. So think about it. God didn't just speak us into existence like he did everything else. The scripture says he made us. In fact, Genesis chapter 2 at verse 7. In Genesis chapter 2 at verse 7, he says, God formed the man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living creature. Now, we could talk about all the things that it means to be made in the image of God. But I think one of the things that we can say for sure is that means that we as human beings are the closest thing in all of creation to God. We are the part here where we are made in the image of God. God breathed life into us, into man. And everything that the Bible says about the worth and the dignity of human beings is really wrapped up right here in this story, right here in this creation account. Because remember, we as human beings are not the result of millions of years of evolution and coming from pond scum to monkeys or some sort of jellyfish or something like that, that society and universities will tell our young people. The Bible is clear that we are made in the image of God, and we are valuable because we were created to bear the glory of the God who brought us into existence. That's why we have value. So in the midst of a world that tries to determine our value based upon possessions, based upon wealth, based upon power or influence, the Bible teaches that all of us have an infinite value. It's not about how much you have or what you don't have. Our value is defined because we were created in the image of God. And that makes a person worthy of respect. Another thing that I want us to see is in Genesis chapter 9. We see how this relates to the subject of murder. When Noah and his family left the ark, God gave them some rules for living in this new world. Had been washed clean, remember, by the flood. And he explained to them, for the first time, man would be allowed to kill animals and eat them for food. But he says this in Genesis 9 and verse 6, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. And God says that the same thing that was true of Adam is true of each one of us. We are all made in his image. We're not descendants of some monkey. We were created by God himself. And as Job said in Job 33 at verse 4, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. And so human life, all of human life is valuable because we are made in the image of God. Consider this. Human life is valuable because of the price that's paid for us. You know, as humans, and especially in our culture, the question is often asked, how much am I worth? We hear that language all the time. Some famous person passes away. Well, how much was he worth is a question that people want to know. How much are you worth? How much am I worth? I was curious about that. So I didn't go to my bank accounts to find this out. I went to humansforsale.com. And on humansforsale.com, I was able to tell this website that I was born. I didn't give them my birthday because I don't trust it. But I was born in close to 1980. And I have, blonde hair, blue eyes. It asked me if I was balding. I said no. Asked me if I had 20/20 vision. I said, of course. I gave myself an athletic build and a super high IQ and all those things. And so at the end of it, it told me that I was worth $3.4 million. Anybody here willing to pay that for me? I doubt so. Is there anybody here that would pay that much for someone? I mean, so you think about that. Or you think about, it's been a long time since I've seen this show, but I liked it. Antique Roadshow. I can't remember what that was on. Maybe it's PBS or something. And they would go into these antique shows, and someone would bring some sort of, maybe it's some family heirloom that they've had for, been passed down through generations, or maybe somebody found something at a yard sale, and it's some antique, and they put it here before the expert. And the expert tells the individual all about this antique and where it was from, and the story and the history, all of that behind it. And then they give a price, and they were always quick to say, this is what it would probably go for at auction. I'm not telling you what the item's worth. I'm just telling you what it might bring in an auction. And so in reality, really, that's just what something's worth. It is worth what someone is willing to pay for it. Just a few months ago, I was at my parents' and I found some of you guys my age might remember starting lineups were these little, figurines of sports figures. And me and my friend, we collected all of these things. I found one that I held on to unopened, Ken Griffey Jr. I loved Ken Griffey Jr. as a kid. And so it was an unopened starting lineup. And I thought, well, I got something here. So I brought that back. I got on eBay and it sells for $8.75. So I still have it in the box. Can't bring myself to open it. But you get the idea. You determine the value of something by what someone is willing to pay for it. Now let's think about for us. What was God willing to pay for us? You know where I'm going with this. Romans chapter 5 and verse 8. God demonstrates, or God shows his own love towards us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Romans chapter 8. God did not spare his own son. He was willing to give up his only son for us. Jesus was willing to shed his blood. I don't have it on the screen, but 1 Peter chapter 1 at verse 18, not with things that are imperishable, but we were saved with the precious blood of Christ, that pure and perfect lamb. So let's think about what that means in practical terms. We have value as human beings because God was willing to give the life of his only son. So what that means is that difficult boss or that difficult co-worker that you have that makes your life really hard at times, that person has value. That person has value. That neighbor who maybe It lets their dog go over and destroy their yard. That's me. That person has value, that difficult neighbor, or maybe that family member that is difficult to get along with, and that family member who tries to bring you down or tries to make life difficult for you, that person has value. That person is worth much to God. The person who irritates you, the person who frustrates you, all of those things, that individual has value. God says that every person on the face of the earth is extremely valuable to him, made in his image, bought by the blood of Christ. So let's think about, though, something that Jesus had to say about this. Because Jesus really gets at the heart of this commandment. It's more than just about the action of murder. Because you think about it. I mean, you shall not murder. We feel pretty good about that one. I've not done that, so I can be pretty proud of myself, get a little self-righteous over that fact. But Jesus says something about this that really puts this in perspective for all of us. This has something to do. That commandment in Exodus chapter 20, and it's repeated throughout the Old Testament. This commandment says something to us about how we value and respect human life. In Matthew chapter 5, at verse 21, Jesus says this. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. And whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. So what's Jesus saying here? I think Jesus is getting at this point that when we get this angry with someone, to where we begin to even hurl names at this individual, and we begin to rage at this individual, Jesus says deep down inside of us, what we're really thinking is that this person doesn't deserve to be alive. We might not verbalize that, but that's the attitude that we have. In that instance of anger, we're saying, I don't want to have anything to do with this first person. And as far as I'm concerned, my life would be better off if theirs would end. And perhaps that's where we really struggle. Maybe this is where we find ourselves more often than we'd like to admit. Murder in the heart. This is where all of this starts. This is where all of it begins. And we can be, I think, a lot like the Pharisees. We might rather just deal with the externals. Well, at least I've never shot anybody. I've never stabbed anyone. But Jesus says, I want you to look inside. Look at the internal, not just the external. Look at the internal things. What's really happening in my heart with my relationships in life? You see, God knows that when we love him and when we put him above everything else, and when I put him first in my life, I won't want to hurt anyone. It will not be in my heart to offend. It will not be in my heart to slander. It will not be in my heart to hurt, to humiliate, or to destroy, or write anyone off. I mean, in fact, when I put God first in my life, and I choose to live for Him, I will develop a heart like God, just like God toward the people around me. So when we've been reading, "You shall not murder," goes beyond that physical act. It's a call to respect people, and it's a call to care for people. Because I think it means actively doing something for their good. Something for their good. Why? Because they're valuable. Because they're made in the image of God. I think if we're honest with ourselves, we'll say we struggle with this. We struggle with this. We have the tendency to make all sorts of judgments about people. I mean, just think about very basically, we might see somebody on the streets or in the grocery store or maybe even come into this assembly. We might make judgments about that person, about who is valuable and who is not. And I'll tell you, the goal that we need to set for ourselves tonight is to begin to look at people through the lens of God, through His perspective. Because the only way that we can truly cherish the lives of human beings, of other people, is to see each and every person the way that God sees them. Made in His image and worth more than the life of His only Son. And when we look at a person that way, the way that God looks at them, they take on a whole new light. And I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to let people know. We need to let the people know around us that do not have a relationship with God those two very important points. We can, in our conversations, as we strive to be more evangelistic and have doors of opportunity open for us to take the word through, we can, in our conversations, tell people those two important truths, that you are valuable to God because you are made in His image, and you are valuable to Him because He gave His only Son to die on the cross so that you can be reconciled back to Him and have a home in heaven. You see, when we see everyone as made in the image of God as valuable, we will want everyone to have a relationship with Him and for everyone to have the hope of heaven that we have. So if you're here tonight, and maybe you need to hear that. Maybe you need to hear that you are valuable. Maybe despite what people have said to you in the past, maybe even loved ones have said differently to you in your life, it's important for you to see that God so loved the world, God so loved you, that He gave His only begotten Son. Would you believe in Him? Would you trust Him? Would you obey Him and have a relationship with Him tonight by entering the waters of baptism and having your sins washed away? If we can help you with that, let us know tonight while we stand and sing.